It's on the screen, amazing. We're going from all the payments to protecting your Bitcoin, arguably more important, and to host the next panel. It's going to be Luke DeWolf. He's back on the stage again. Please give him a round of applause. The co-host of the Bitcoin Infinity Show, put by Dennis Masovich, Head of Infrastructure and Security at ISAT. Dennis takes the stage. Massimo Musumichi, who is a physicist, lightning app developer, and educator. And last, but by no means least, we have the CTO of Casa, Jameson Lopp. Thank you so much, guys. Please give a round of applause. Have a great panel.
Right. Good afternoon again, nice hashtags. Good afternoon, gentlemen. So, this panel is about security and privacy. And these are interesting topics in the Bitcoin space. So before we dive into that, I think we'll just do a quick round of introductions, a little bit about who you are and what you do in the space, for a little more context. So Dennis, I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, so I joined iStash more than 6 years ago. I take care about infrastructure and security. Before that, I worked a similar job helping banks. So I'm a long time in the financial industry. And that's it.
Excellent. Massimo.
Hi, everyone. My name is Massimo Musumichi. I work as a dev for Lightning applications at Denali.Swiss, which is a Bitcoin-only Swiss exchange. And I am also a content creator, educator in this area.
Excellent. Jameson?
So I've been building high-security self-custody wallets for a decade now. First 3 years, I was at BitGo, mostly focused on enterprise wallets, helping exchanges and companies secure their hot wallets. And then 7 years ago, I co-founded Casa. And Casa, basically, we are targeting individuals to help onboard them into really the highest possible self-custody architecture that we can think of.
Excellent. So I think between the three of you, there's a lot of perspectives in the security and privacy side. So maybe let's start with the big picture. What is security and how does it relate to Bitcoin? Dennis?
So I like to use an analogy that security is just like health. In a way that usually we have, when we are young, we have a lot of it and we don't think about it. Until we run out of it, and not being healthy can be a serious issue. And if you think about it, what you can do to stay healthy, the best thing is to follow very simple rules. Watch what you eat, exercise, sleep well, and don't do risky stuff. And exactly the same thing goes for security. So it's nice to have institutions which can help you, but you should really think carefully and take actions yourself before it's too late.
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why both security and privacy are very difficult things to talk about with people, because we are talking about being proactive, and you know, humans in general take the path of least resistance, whatever is the most convenient. And there's also generally a mindset of, well, if whatever I'm doing so far seems to have worked, like, why should I put more effort into it? And so it's unfortunate that, you know, being in the security space often feels like we're fear-mongering, like we're telling you, oh, these are all the things that could go wrong. And it's true, but we're doing this because we've seen many catastrophes over the past 15 years of the space, and we can learn from them, and we should learn from them. I've always said it's better to learn from other people's mistakes than from your own.
Also, anything to add?
Yes. With Bitcoin, we need to build our security. Our security needs privacy. And so we have a great responsibility in taking care of our Bitcoin. So we need to be careful. We need to learn how to protect ourselves and use self-custodial ways to do that. This is important.
Yeah, and so I think this enters us into this conversation in a really good way, because a lot of users, people who are first entering into the Bitcoin space, they do not get their first Bitcoin by directly receiving a UTXO on the blockchain. They don't even necessarily get it through a Lightning wallet or something like this. They get it on platforms or exchanges or something like this. And so what is this, at this first step, what can users do to be as secure as possible in this first entry into the ecosystem? Dennis?
So, yeah, NiceHash is one of the platforms where we had over 1 million users earning their first Satoshis. And it is interesting, we support 2FA, second factor authentication, for I think 7 years, 8 years. But until we start enforcing those methods, people were not keen to use it for whatever reason. But, you know, it is only so much the platform can do. What we can do, we can offer you secure ways of authentication and then authorization of your actions. And you have to follow those rules and, you know, you should really think about not only the platform. I would say that the biggest failure of users is protecting their mobile bank or crypto platform and not thinking about other things of their life. And usually the email is the most important one, because many of those services you access via email. And if you don't protect your email, someone can reset passwords, someone can do a lot of things you don't want them to do. So you should start thinking about protecting all of your accounts. And it's like we said before, health. You cannot say, I'm going to do healthy life over day, but overnight I'm going to do whatever I want. So you should really activate additional factor of authentication and use a hardware device whenever possible.
Basic cybersecurity, use a password manager. Use, you know, one of the highly vetted password managers that's out there, like 1Password, KeePass. It doesn't really matter, as long as it's something that's used by millions and millions of people and, you know, has a lot of eyes on it. If you know in your head the passwords to log into your different accounts, you're doing it wrong. You should only know 1Password, and that is the password that unlocks your password manager. If you're doing your passwords in your head, you're most likely reusing passwords on different services, and eventually some of those are going to get leaked. They're going to get used against you. We see drive-by attacks all the time where these leaked username and password lists get used against every other popular service just to see which ones are being reused. If they can get into those accounts, they're going to drain them. Of course, the next step is two-factor authentication. That's a whole other rabbit hole because there's many types. The best is, of course, a hardware-based 2FA. I highly recommend buying a YubiKey. This is like a $40, $50 investment. That's like the strongest possible two-factor authentication that you can have. The next step down, which doesn't cost anything, is something like a, you know, Google Authenticator with those rolling codes. And then the very worst type of 2FA is the SMS-based. And that's generally because your phone accounts are not particularly secure, and we see a lot of SIM swapping or phone jacking in this space, where basically an attacker will either bribe employees at a telecom or somehow otherwise trick them into changing the ownership of your phone number account over to them, and then of course they own all of your two-factor authentication and they can start resetting all of the passwords to your various accounts, such as email and then exchange accounts.
Yeah, so we're starting from a point where basically if you're using an exchange, you're relying on basic cybersecurity skills that apply everywhere else. Right, but then to take this a little bit more specific into the Bitcoin world, it's when you really get off the exchange that it starts to become more Bitcoin specific. And so now, these days, there are two methods of coming off of the exchange, at least commonly, and one is Lightning. And this is, I think, an area that you have some thoughts on, Massimo. Care to share?
Yes. So many people now are purchasing Bitcoin under a platform, and many times it is a KYC platform, so the platform knows everything about yourself, so it knows your identity, your financial data and documents and so on. So it's easy then to associate your withdrawal from a centralized exchange to your destination address, and then track this the future movements you can do later. So in case the platform is abused or is forced to reveal such information, this information can track even your future payments. So it could be nice to evaluate also the possibility to withdraw using the Lightning Network. Many platforms are nowadays supporting this kind of withdrawal method. And with in this way, you can withdraw in many times, accumulate maybe on channels, and then evaluate to go back on chain later, maybe after some jump in several nodes, etc. This could be something useful for privacy, but as also Jameson said, privacy is strictly connected to security, because we need to be private also to preserve our physical security in now and in the future. So this could be a way.
Yeah, so Lightning really then gives a tool to start to increase the privacy, but how private is it? Is it really something that in fact increases that privacy if you're using a central exchange as your starting point? Jameson, any thoughts?
It always depends on how many trusted third parties you're using, and especially trusted third parties that you have given your personal information to. So, like I said, this is usually trade-offs between convenience and then security and privacy. And so, like, the most convenient way to do some of the stuff Massimo was talking about would be you onboard into a KYC exchange, then perhaps you withdraw to a custodial Lightning wallet. Well, now you've actually given up all of your privacy, because the benefits of onion routing on the Lightning Network no longer matter if on both ends, you know, the people or the services that are helping you do that can see, you know, all of that information. So, you know, ultimately, if you want the highest level of security or privacy in this space, you need to be doing things yourself. You need to be, you know, running your own software, running your own nodes, and that takes work. You know, it's more difficult, and this is why a lot of people don't do that, is because generally people take the path of least resistance, highest convenience. And, you know, that's why we have all of these talks, because we're trying to convey the trade-offs that you were making as a result of going the more convenient path.
Yeah, exactly, because I think the thing here is that these are all individual choices, right? Security and privacy, it depends on your perspective, and maybe security is top of mind at the moment because, I don't know, I like the health analogy, Dennis, that it's sort of, it only comes up when you really need it, and therefore that might suffer, but privacy is also the same thing. In the Bitcoin space, it's really difficult to actually achieve privacy in any meaningful way, because privacy is really a misnomer. Everything on the blockchain actually is there. It's just a matter of how can you associate that with an identity. And so Dennis, I know you have some thoughts about the sort of the privacy versus anonymity. Can you get into that?
Well, first, privacy and security, I mean, if you are insecure, you can still get secure, but if you lose your privacy, you probably won't gonna get it back in days of internet, so that's a really big issue, and when you try to enforce KYC, we also try to enforce strong authentication methods, because if you allow someone to get to a KYC account, well, there is a big chance he might get a lot of your personal information, which you certainly don't want to. And it's not only for the crypto platform, it's for any platform which does KYC. Now, about anonymity, I believe that it's mentioned many times in Bitcoin paper because, yeah, there was this vision of having anonymous transactions, which means transactions are there, we can all see it to verify, but we don't know who is actually doing them. Now, privacy is a different thing because privacy, we can do two of us transactions and no one will know about it. And that's not the way that blockchains are designed, at least Bitcoin not. So that's a different issue, but I think that the KYC is interesting because we talked about before two different factors of authentication, like passwords, something you know, only you know, only you should know, right? And something only you should have, like hardware key, and SMS is here problem because it is not something only you have. It's actually what your mobile provider has, and it just gives you the SIM card, and he can make many of those again. But there's a third thing, and this is something only you are. And if you have KYC, if you have video check, then we can do the selfie and check if this is really you. So that's another factor that sometimes KYC can be used also as a security method. And we do use it because people tend to lose their two-factor authentication and then they want to regain their account back. So that's when something which is actually invading your privacy can be used also for security.
Well, so an interesting thing here, KYC, I guess in this case, is being used as a security measure, which...
Yeah, for this special case, because normally you would use a password and as a first factor authentication and then hardware key or OTP generated on your mobile phone as second factor. But if you lose your phone and you won't believe how many people will sell their phone with their codes on it, and then they want to get their account back, and we don't have this second factor. So then we use selfie as a what only you are, and check that as a second factor authentication.
Yeah, so I think this illustrates the trade-off fairly well between security and then this sort of self-sovereignty ethos, which is big in the Bitcoin community generally here, in terms of especially when we're talking about that if you're really going to be interacting with the Bitcoin base layer, the blockchain, UTXOs, holding your own UTXOs, that's the polar opposite from operating on an exchange. And so we kind of are in this area where a transaction from one UTXO to another is not actually private. It's visible on the blockchain. So are there ways to basically break those links and actually create privacy? Tools like, for example, Samurai and Wasabi that have recently been taken down has sort of degraded this possibility. But is there still any way that once you've got a UTXO through a KYC service, can you make yourself private again? Any thoughts on this?
You can, and I mean, Joint Market is still running. Joint Market will never be shut down because it is completely decentralized. PayJoin is another type of CoinJoin that's also fairly interactive, unfortunately not highly adopted. But the trade-offs with trying to do strong privacy via coin mixing to protect yourself from the KYC providers is they know you're doing this. And if they see you doing this, they may decide to stop servicing you. So it's a weird type of trade-off where I would say the strongest privacy that you can attain in Bitcoin is by earning your Bitcoin directly, you know, engaging in peer-to-peer commerce, selling goods and services. then you're not going through a trusted third party that's doing data collection and forcing you to hand over personal identifiable information. That's one of the reasons why Satoshi was able to remain anonymous. There were no trusted third-party custodial KYC services back then. It was truly a peer-to-peer economy. That's generally what I recommend to people, because otherwise you're trying to straddle this weird line between using privacy stripping services and trying to regain your privacy, and meanwhile balancing that with the fact that they can see what you're doing and may just decide to cut off your access.
And is there really, so one point here as well is that if you have a UTXO that's come from KYC, therefore theoretically there's an identity attached to that. Once that hops X number of times, usually these chain analytics softwares that make these determinations, they really can't understand if that's still the same person anymore. Is that a factor in any of this, that KYC is not actually necessarily this big bugaboo? It's really maybe that it's once you actually hold your own keys that everything is okay, you can just move it around?
Once you are in a sovereign self-custody setup, it's permissionless. You can do whatever you want. Those exchange accounts are not permissionless. They can shut you off at any time. So I think it's more of a question of, do you just start off from a sovereign setup and stay there? Can you do that, without having the convenience and the reliance upon the banking system?
Well, we talked about how Lightning maybe has, if you're going through a third party originally, that Lightning might have not necessarily the privacy that people think you have, but what if you're starting from this position of self-sovereignty, as in you're creating your own channels, or you're using some kind of application that helps you to create your own channels, or at least use their Lightning service provider? Massimo, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yes, on the Lightning Network, the best solution is to build up your own node. So this is the best solution. You own your node, you open your channels, and you manage the liquidity. This is the best choice. But obviously, this requires some skills. So here is where education comes in place. And it is important. Otherwise, yes, at the beginning, people approaching the Lightning Network may use something custodial, but we have the problems that Jameson said about the custody, the self-sovereignty. Otherwise, there are quite new solutions emerging, like PhoenixD, for example, on-demand nodes you can run on a simple VPS, for example, or even at home. And in this case, obviously, you own the keys, so this is an advantage. But you need always an LSP. For example, for PhoenixD, it's a sync. But this can be a good solution to start with, to start playing with the Lightning Network, and to start understanding how is the impact on the privacy when dealing with the channels, when dealing with Lightning transactions, and so on. And then, when the skills you acquire are better and better, then obviously you should go to something where you manage all the setup. So this means hardware, network connectivity, liquidity, opening the channels, the liquidity on the channels, and so on. So this could be the steps for this.
I think skill issue is really the main point of all of this, is that Bitcoin allows for a great level of security, but you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah, and I would add that if you would really do all of these things that Massimo said, think about how many signals you will leave out that would enable you someone to identify you. I mean, you have to set up server, have network, a lot of things. So, you know, to stay unknown like Satoshi, it's not easy today. They proved that from chain analysis itself, I mean, from blockchain analysis, they can find the probable source of many transactions. So, it's to stay away from this, it's really, really hard. And we, on the other hand, we, no one likes to have their user forced to do KYC. Also for companies, this is a cost. So we're not keen, I mean, we're not enjoying it. But the regulator who's forcing it has some certain opinion of what kind of people use Bitcoin. And I think if on the long run it changes this opinion, it might be a good thing, because no one wants to, you know, be called criminal, because we don't have anything to do with that. And this is how some people see us who are using Bitcoin. So I think it is what it is. On a personal level, government cannot force you to do that, but the companies can be forced, because you have to be the license, you have to be in a certain country. And this is where the pressure is right now. The governments are pressing platforms to do KYC. And when the travel rule comes, it's going to be even harder, so even less privacy. And the problem with this is, even if you find ways to get around it and send money to your friend, then he will be the one who will have to pay the price. Someone sooner or later has to go and interact with someone, at least in this moment, who is obligated to do KYC.
Well, it's interesting you brought up this point, because regulations and different jurisdictions are basically one of the areas now where different countries are differentiating themselves in terms of policy, or even super country entities such as the EU. And, well, the topical thing on the mind right now a little bit is that there was just an election in the United States, and maybe it looks like some things are going in a more pro-Bitcoin direction there. The EU might be going in an opposite direction. Jameson, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm breathing a bit of a sigh of relief, of course, as CASA being a United States company, and us seeing some of the proposed regulations over the past few years that, you know, Biden and Democratic administration have been wanting to see. You know, hopefully we can at least have a few years of relief from having to worry about any of those passing, but we could just come back around for full circle in another 4 years. So that's kind of, you know, the downside of politics. You know, there is no real permanence there. It's just about what we can deal with right now. And at CASA, we specifically do everything that we can to avoid falling under the guidance of financial regulations. We're lucky that we are non-custodial. We don't touch anybody's money, so we're not considered a financial service. We're considered a software service. And so far in the United States, they have not managed to pull us into the umbrella of financial regulations, though there are certainly plenty of politicians and bureaucrats who would love to do that.
Any other comments on the regulatory space, guys? Massimo, anything here?
But as Jameson said some minutes ago, the best solution for getting into Bitcoin space is always to be paid in Bitcoin, to make services, consultancy, everything you do, to be paid in Bitcoin. If you have a shop, also you can take payments in Bitcoin, like in network. Has been, it is very useful for such purposes. So if you take Bitcoin in such a way, you get rid of everything else. But I know that it's not easy at the moment, because not so many people are usual to pay in Bitcoin. Many people are scared also to pay in Bitcoins. In Bitcoin, many people also think to Bitcoin as something financial instrument, something to speculate. Many people still do not understand what Bitcoin really is, and so these are difficulties that we have that everyone can start earning Bitcoin. So the best solution is this. On the other hand, anytime you are using some centralized platforms, some kind of instrument, you are facing the regulation. It's obvious that when a company is located in the EU or in the US, they must comply to the regulations. And so the solution is for people to find a way to enter the system in the more private and self-custodial way.
I would just like to add that we are mostly talking these days about regulations coming from anti-money laundering, but these are not the only regulations that are out there. And looking at the banking world, not all regulations are necessarily bad or invasion to your privacy. So, like in the banking world, the NFC payments, which we all use today, they also came from certain regulations, also protecting money that you put in. So we see in crypto world a lot of pull rats and other unauthorized use of assets of users for whatever reason, which is really bringing bad thing to crypto. So regulations that would help crypto platforms be more secure, I think, would be welcome, because it's important step to come to the point where more people will use crypto and feel safer and be safer. So, but unfortunately, at this moment, we are seeing only these very restrictive regulations coming from organizations that don't trust us at all and think we're all criminals and they want to, you know, see who is doing more crime. And this is the issue that we are having. I would like that they would change this, and but I agree from what James said, the best thing they could do right now is leave us alone. I'm afraid this is not going to happen, at least not in Europe.
You're making good points, and I certainly agree that this is going to be one of the big battlegrounds going forward, is the governments versus the companies versus the individuals, and we'll certainly see how this plays out. But on the individual level, maybe on a last note, what about those of us who are already in the paranoid crypto anarchist camp? Any final considerations that someone in that scenario might have to contend with?
Yeah, I can actually tie this into the first question I see. Someone was asking, is a Tangle wallet safe enough? And that's basically, I think, an NFC card hardware wallet. And so, is anything safe enough? There are many different levels of security, and they all protect you against different types of threats and adversaries. And so I categorize it into a number of different setups. So level zero is you're a no-coiner, you don't have any Bitcoin, you don't need to care about this stuff. Level one, you have Bitcoin IOUs on an exchange with a trusted third party somewhere. We talked about the basic cybersecurity that you can do to protect that, but of course you're always going to be at the whim of that custodian and any mistakes they make or any problems that could come in and, you know, cause them to lose the coins. The next step is you're in self-custody, single signature wallet. This is where like something like Tangum could come into play. Though, the initial, I think most people would just have a software wallet, which is a hot wallet, you're still susceptible to attackers. Tango is like the next level where you at least take the keys off of the internet. But what Tango and some of those types of wallets don't have is you can't actually verify the transaction details on your separate hardware screens. So you lose a little bit of verification there. And then, as you were saying, the sort of paranoid crypto-anarchist ultimate setup is really what I've been doing for the past 10 years, which is multi-signature. That basically means instead of having one key that unlocks your Bitcoin, you have multiple different keys. You can put them on different devices, different hardware, have them geographically distributed, and this gives you an extreme level of robustness and redundancy against all types of theft and loss.
It's a fantastic way to end this off, and we're just freshly out of time here. Maybe Massimo, do you have any final thoughts from your end that we've also just heard from the other two? Anything else?
I completely agree with Jameson. Yes, the most important is to get your coins on. You use your outdoor device to keep safe your keys and be safe and. Keep your money.
Yes, absolutely agree. So thank you all for this great talk about Bitcoin security and privacy, and let's all do our best to stay as secure and private as possible. Okay.